and welcome to a new episode of the Between the Posts podcast. Today we will tackle what is still the biggest match in club football, El Clásico. FC Barcelona against Real Madrid. Of course, a no-brainer when that one turns up on the fixture list. My name is Erik Elias. With me here to discuss this match, also of Between the Posts, Jose Perez. Jose, welcome.
Hello, Erik. Hello, everyone. And I've been kind of disappointed with Clásicos in previous years because I guess I found them a bit boring. This Clásico was a lot of things and maybe in some situations not the best football, but we cannot say that it was boring.
No, I think maybe we have come to expect that it was the standard between two of the best football teams in the world in the past decade. For the past few seasons, that was not really the case, but it was not fun. And today, maybe it was not as good as it used to be, but it was fun. So that's a winning point.
Absolutely. There's going to be a lot to talk about because it was a very high-tempo game. It was a lot of come and go. So we'll have a lot to talk about. So let's go on to the lineups, I guess.
Yeah. So Ronald Koeman is a Dutch manager managing Barcelona, but he does not play a 4-3-3 formation. He goes for a 4-2-3-1 shape, even though we can say it's almost a 4-2-4 shape at times. Yeah, a lot of implications that has, so we'll talk about that later. The biggest absentee for Barcelona is the goalkeeper, Marc-André Ter Stegen. He is replaced in goal by Neto, who had some pretty good saves today, by the way. Center backs, as always, Piqué and Langlet. The fullbacks, Jordi Alba on the left, as always, and Serginho Dest, the half-American, half-Dutch right back. No Sergi Roberto, that was quite a surprise. Dest, who is more athletic, offers maybe more going forward, but we talk about that later. Yeah, the midfield duo, the double pivot with Sergio Busquets and Frenkie de Jong. And yeah, the front four, as we can call them, Ansu Fati, Coutinho, Messi and Pedri. And we could have suspected maybe Ansu Fati on the left, because that's where he was all the time, and Messi as the number 10 or as the striker. But we didn't see that because Ansu Fati played as the central striker, Messi as a really free number 10. He had a lot of freedom. Normally he has a lot of freedom, but now it seemed like he was all over the pitch. And as the wingers, we had Coutinho on the left and Pedri on the right. Jose, for the people that have not followed Barcelona that close this season, but have tuned in for this game, who is Pedri, 17 years old, coming from La Masia, the Barcelona Youth Academy? Can you fill us in a little bit on him?
Absolutely. So Pedro González, Pedri, for those who haven't kept track of him, to be honest, I myself haven't kept track of him that much, but I know people who like to follow lower division Spanish football that were looking at him and couldn't shut up about him and how interesting of a player he was. So Pedri, as we already mentioned, 17 years old. He played, he's part of La Masia, but he had been playing before, if I recall correctly, at Las Palmas. So that's in the lower division. And he had been doing a pretty good job last season. And it looks like Koeman decided to take him into the squad for this season. Pedri is more...
I'm sorry to interrupt. If I look at him, I don't think he's a winger, is he? He's not a winger type.
No, not really, which is something that I found weird for this lineup selection, because Pedri is not really like a winger type. He's more of an attacking midfielder type who's going to, like, more of a playmaker, more receiving between the lines. So I was a bit surprised that Koeman went for that profile instead of Francisco Trinchao or Dembélé.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he would be a better fit. But anyway, Koeman goes with the 4-2-3-1 and he plays two 17-year-olds with Pedri and Fati and one 19-year-old, Serginho Dest. So a really young Barcelona this time. What about Real Madrid?
So this is one of those funny situations because at least, especially among the crew at Managing Madrid, we always make the joke that you try to like figure out what Zidane's lineup is before a big game, and you always get it wrong. This time, I think most analysts got it right. So Zidane played with the usual 4-3-3. Real right now are conditioned by the longer-term injuries of Dani Carvajal and Eden Hazard, and also Martin Odegaard is out for about a month with an injury. So those are the key injuries. And again, Zidane did not surprise us with the starting lineup. We had, as usual, in the keeper position, Thibaut Courtois, who keeps winning points for his side today with a massive save we'll talk about later. Center backs, as usual, Sergio Ramos and Rafa Varane. The fullbacks, which was one of the areas where I thought Zidane could give us a surprise. In the end, Zidane went for the expected names for Ferland Mendy on the left and Nacho, most importantly, on the right, even though I must say Nacho suffered a bit during the first half. We'll talk about more about that later. In the midfield, Luka Modric had already started the previous two games. So last week versus in the defeat versus Cadiz and also in the defeat versus Shakhtar. So it was kind of expected that he was going to be benched. So, and we got the midfield trio of Toni Kroos, Casemiro, Fede Valverde, which from a pressing perspective tends to be the strongest midfield for Real Madrid. And it kind of have an impact. And the front three was, again, as expected. Over the last month, Zidane has really liked the trio of Vinicius, Karim Benzema, and Marco Asensio. And those are the three players who made it to the starting lineup. So, again, no surprises there. So, time to go on to what happened into the actual game.
Yes, and we got quite a fun start to the game because we got two goals in the first 8 or 9 minutes. And funnily enough, both of those goals were the result of a kind of attacking sequence that we see a lot of times with these two teams. We'll talk about that a bit more. But yeah, for the first goal, which happened after 5 minutes, scored by Fede Valverde for Real Madrid, we see Real Madrid's build-up, Sergio Ramos in possession, and Barcelona are pressing. But the way they are pressing is strange. They are pressing with 5 players, but they are not really developing any actual pressure on the ball. Jose, what went wrong there? Why could Real Madrid score so easily?
That's an interesting point, and I think it's good to review a bit how Barcelona were pressing. So, as we said, Fatih was mostly played as a striker, and it also means that when Barcelona did not have the ball and were pressing, he was also pressing he was the most advanced player who was pressing. Then Messi, as usual, didn't press that much. You often had the situation where instead of him, you had, say, Frenkie or Busquets going up to press. And I think you also mentioned, so what did you notice about how Coutinho and Pedri were pressing?
It was strange because they were, like I said, pressing with 5 players. Pedri was on the right. He wasn't really marking anyone. So it was not a man-oriented press, but it was also not a zonally-oriented press. Coutinho was stuck somewhere in between. He was not pressing Varane, but he was also way too far from Nacho. So you had 2 players, and Frenkie de Jong was 20 yards too high, maybe. So you had 2 or 3 players who were truly out of position, and then Sergio Ramos could make a long pass to Nacho Fernandez. And then, yeah, the biggest rule, what you shouldn't do in football, happened. They didn't press, but they also kept a high line. And that's always a golden rule in football. You cannot do that. So Nacho Fernandez had time on the ball. And then if you go look back at the footage, Real Madrid actually has an overload in the center of the pitch because of that. So they have a numerical superiority in the middle of the pitch. And basically it boils down to Benzema dropping deep, which he has done for like the past 10 seasons or so. Benzema dropping deep and then Fede Valverde making use of that space in his back makes a late run. And yeah, I don't want to clown on Sergio Busquets too much because he was the best holding midfielder in the world for a time. He's still a great passer, but that was not even a foot race, what they did. I don't know how I should call it, but Valverde just sprinted by him, just annihilated him physically, went on for a 1v1 and scored there. So you have there in 12, 13 seconds, you have the entire problem of Barcelona's defense, which is they cannot press high up the field because it's uncoordinated and they don't have the personnel for it. So that really exposed a lot of Barcelona's shortcomings there.
Yeah, and that was also a situation. So another issue with Barca's kind of 4-2-4 pressing is that the double pivot looks, both Frenkie and Busquets look super confused about when to press, when not to press. And by the way, at that point, even if they have individual issues, that's a system issue. And in this situation, for example, in the goal, yes. So Real Madrid were keeping the ball on their left side. Busquets was not pressing, so Frenkie had to move all the way from his side to the other in order to press, and he left that gap, which is where like Valverde ran into, and then neither Piqué nor Busquets could catch him.
He burned
through them. So, and by the way, another thing I'd like to mention, kudos to Asensio's movement in that goal, because for Benzema to receive well in between the lines, Longley was going to follow him. So Asensio just stayed there and pinned down Longley, which gave extra space to Benzema to receive the ball and hold it up there and wait for Valverde to sprint past everyone. So really, it was honestly that combined with the original build-up phase between like Kroos, Ramos, and Casemiro, it was a very nice team goal.
Yes, and like I said, a goal on this level is never, almost never, the result of one player doing wrong or whatever. But you saw there clearly the mistakes that were made by Barcelona players, individual and as a team. But luckily for them, 3 minutes later, the game is level already. And where Real Madrid really likes to attack with Benzema dropping into the midfield and then runners in behind him, like Valverde, like Vinicius, etc., Barcelona really like to attack with Jordi Alba making runs behind the defense and Messi finding him. And that's exactly what we saw at the equalizer, Jose.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. One of the things that I found curious is that with Koeman's Barca is that, yes, because Messi originally had been playing from the right side, you had many situations like in previous games where, of course, all the action, like right now, it's all about Alba, Fati, Coutinho on the left side, and Messi wants in on the action, so he often moves over to the left side. And today, he had even more freedom to do that, so you had many situations where Messi was just operating on the left side, and here he kind of lopped the pass to Alba for that goal. There were many interesting movements that led to that Alba run, by the way.
Well, tell us about it. This is the Tactics Podcast. You can do it here.
So one of the things I liked is that Coutinho actually stayed to the left, but also a bit narrow so that he could attract Nacho to him. And that creates the space on the very, like right by the left touchline so that Alba can make the run. And here's the important part, like, especially at the beginning of the game, Asensio was not tracking Alba when he made those runs. So like the first 15 to 20 minutes of the game, Asensio was struggling to track Alba. And that created dangerous chances for Barcelona. And that kind of helped create the goal. Because, yes, in the goal, Asensio does not track Alba. Alba makes the run. Messi lobs the pass. And then Alba makes the cutback to Ansu Fati, who, I must say, the instinct, the goal-scoring instinct of this kid
is
amazing. Because the moment Alba starts making the run, and Fati immediately sees the danger, and he goes in between Real Madrid center backs because he knows like he needs to be at the same height of the pitch as Alba to receive the pass. And because Fati started running before everyone else, he got the advantage over Varane and Ramos.
Yeah. Do you think it was planned by Koeman that Coutinho would come inside and Nacho would follow Coutinho and then he could have the 1v1 with Alba and Asensio? Because I don't know if it was pre-rehearsed, but it looked to expose the vulnerability of Asensio on the right flank.
It's hard to know how much is rehearsed, how much is Koeman giving decision-making, like letting the attackers make decisions. But that movement in particular, I have to admit, was very specific. Like the Coutinho pulls someone to him so that Alba can make the run. That being said, I've seen maybe not that exact movement, but I've seen really good interplay between Coutinho, Fati, and Alba over these first five games of the season. So they understand each other really well. They compensate each other's movements really well.
Yeah, one more general point before we go on. I always think it's interesting that we know Barcelona will attack through Alba with those runs. We know Benzema will drop into midfield. You know Real Madrid will build up through Toni Kroos, but the quality is so high, the decisions are so quickly carried out, and the execution is so good that at this level, you can't even stop it. It's the same with Bayern Munich last year. You knew, like we said, their plan was not that hard technically, but it was executed so well, you know? I thought we saw that here today with those two goals.
Yeah, and again, predictable is not necessarily bad because it always depends on the execution. I mean, the best example, historical example I can think of is how Arjen Robben always made the same run cutting inside. You would never stop it, and you could never stop the goal or the assist.
Statistics show that he went to the outside like 35 or 40% of his runs. He went outside a lot of times as well.
That's good to know, but yes. Okay. With Alba, it's a movement that keeps happening. It's been happening for years, and it's hard. It's a bit hard to stop it. That being said, it's not the first time that Real Madrid faces this issue where the winger does not track back with Alba, and that gets them into trouble.
No, and a tough role for Asensio anyway, but let's move on. What kind of first half did we see after the initial storm with two goals, like from the minute 10 until halftime? Like, what did we see?
Honestly, from my perspective, I felt that gradually Barcelona started pressing less and they started defending deeper. And that was actually good for them because if they had tried to press throughout the game, they might have gotten another goal like the first one. So I think it was a good decision for Barca to defend deeper, to defend with a more compact kind of 4-4-2 that they were using. And once they recovered the ball in their own half, they went on the counter and they could generate chances for them. And I think that did make life harder for Real Madrid. Real Madrid had the ball in several situations, but they could not generate shots.
No, they had a harder time than you would expect against that. Like, not when Barcelona were pressing, but they didn't do that much. But when Barcelona were defending in that 4-4-2 with Ansu, Fati and Messi up front and four midfielders and four defenders in behind, Real Madrid did not easily came through, especially on the right with Pedri and Dest, two young guys. They held their own pretty well in this match. That was surprising to me.
I was shocked too, like this, because I think all of us in the chats were like, oh my God, we're getting Dest versus Vinicius, like Dest is going to get blown away here. And it did not happen at all. Like Pedri and Dest dealt really well with the attacks from Mendy and Vinicius. Neither of the Real Madrid attackers could really beat them, like on a one versus one situation. And that's what really made it hard for Real's attack to go through and create chances, because especially when you're dealing with a deep block like this, you need dribblers. And the big dribbler right now for Real Madrid is Vinicius, and he could not do it. He could not do the dribble, which speaks well of the work that Dest and Pedri were doing. But I would also like to point out that this beginning of the season, Vinicius has seen a decrease in his dribbles and take-ons. Like he's dribbling less successfully. I don't know exactly where that problem comes from or why it happens. His movement is pretty intelligent. He's getting sharper with the passing, but right now the dribbling is not at the level that it was last season, and that's a problem for Real Madrid.
Yeah, and a problem they need solving, because it's not like they have all the attacking creativity in the world. But if we look at that first half, in totally 10 shots, 5 shots for Real Madrid, 5 shots for Barcelona, I had the feeling I was watching a fun game with lots of turnovers, good pressing, good tactical stuff. You could see what was going on. But still, relatively little penalty box area action if you look at it. But it didn't bother me at all. Like, Real Madrid had 2 open play shots in the first half, but yeah, I didn't think they played bad or something.
Yeah. Talking about those open play shots, like the one for Real Madrid was kind of funny, because that was a situation where Vinicius was actually making some really smart, like, lob passes. Mm-hmm. And one of them made it to Kroos, who was running behind Busquets, who looks slower than ever. And then he makes the cut back to Benzema. Benzema making a very smart run, like a diagonal run that he makes it behind Alba and then ends up in the penalty spot. But in the end, that was saved by Neto. That was interesting. From the side of Barcelona, they were trying to pick off Real Madrid on the counter. And you had that situation that led to the massive Courtois save, because I think from that came after a Real Madrid corner where Neto does the long throw to Fati and they keep the ball like between Fati and Coutinho for long enough to wait for Messi to come up on the other side. They give it to Messi. Messi destroys Ramos. And then Thibaut's reaction was, I still find it impressive because Messi does a feint to one side. So Courtois goes to one side, but then he goes to the other side and shoots like very quickly. The reaction time, like just to shift from one side to the other and then stop that, it's an insane save.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was interesting. I almost never see that at the top level, that a team, in this case Real Madrid, gets a corner kick and then 10 seconds later it's a counterattack for the other team.
That's also a good point. I think neither Barcelona nor Real Madrid are doing too great at transition defending lately.
No, but overall, if we look at that first half, I think 1-1 going into the second half with a level score is basically a fair reflection of the first half, right? I don't think one team was the better team or whatever.
No. Like that's, again, both of them got kind of good shots in. Then, honestly, after the goals, it was really a draw between both of them. It was hard for, like, Barcelona got their few counter-attacking chances. Then Real Madrid tried to go through the Barcelona deep block and weren't quite doing it. So, honestly, if I had to give a choice on who was doing better, I did feel that after the goals, the match was going a bit more like what Barcelona wanted, because they were waiting in the deep block. They weren't getting too many shots against, but they were managing to create some danger on the counter.
Yeah. One thing before we go into the second half, 2 minutes before halftime, Real Madrid's right back Nacho Fernandez is injured. And then Lucas Vazquez, I think the fourth right back on the Real Madrid squad, goes in for him because, of course, Carvajal and Odriozola are, of course, injured. So Real Madrid go into the second half of El Clásico with their fourth right back. And Lucas Vazquez, to be honest, he's normally an attacker. He did pretty well, let's be honest.
To be honest, in the Real Madrid community, many of us at this point thought that Lucas was a bit, how do I put it? I think a lot of us don't want him playing as a winger anymore because we don't think he can contribute that much from that position. So we had always been curious about seeing him at right back. It's just that previous right back experiments with Lucas Vazquez did not end well from a defensive standpoint. Like, we kind of trust that he can produce on the offense, but defensively, it never quite worked out. Today, defensively, things worked out pretty well for him.
Yeah, I was surprised.
Yes, and that's interesting because as we start with the second half, normally, Ansu Fati would be on that sector trying to attack Lucas Vazquez. But around the 50th minute, Fati decided to move over to the right side and try to make runs behind Ramos and Mendy. So what do you think there, Eric? Do you think that was Koeman's decision? That was Fati's decision? What happened there?
Well, I do think Koeman gives his attackers a lot of freedom to move around in the final third as they like, especially Messi, of course, but also the other guys. But I think this was so long that he stayed on that right flank that I don't think it was his own instinct. I think Koeman wanted him there. And I was thinking of some reasons why he would have done that, but I couldn't really. I think Fati is their most prolific attacker, right? I think he did pretty well, which is quite an odd statement considering his age. But if you look at the 1v1 dribbling, I think for a defender like Lucas Vazquez, it's harder to defend him than to defend Coutinho, who's coming in all the time. So I thought maybe he would have moved him to the left, but then he moved him to the right. So I was quite puzzled about that, really.
Yes, because in theory, you would expect that, yes, Fati was going to have an easier time with Vazquez than he was going to have to with Ramos and Mendy. That being said, so I don't know if that was going to work for the rest of the second half, but at least for like a few minutes when Fati did that, maybe because it was unexpected, he did create danger for there. Because we had these like two dangerous situations. 51st minute, we get a messy through ball and Fati was running right behind Mendy and Ramos. Mm-hmm. He got a dangerous shot off that went like, that flew right past the post. And then 53rd minute, we had another situation where Fati makes the run behind Ramos and Mendy, and he crosses the ball to Coutinho, who was sneaking behind Luca Vázquez, and he headed the ball without any marking. That could have been very dangerous. So at least those two situations were created by Fati moving over to the right. Was that going to work for the rest of the game? I'm not sure, but...
Yeah, I'm curious about that as well, but 5 minutes after that chance you mentioned, we get a game-changing video assistant referee decision, a penalty for Real Madrid, which we have seen so many times, Jose. Oh my God, the VAR, it's so in the Real Madrid's favor, is it not?
Are we going to go there? Do we really want to go
there?
Oh,
joke. So, obviously, you know, Koeman and Frankie are at Barcelona, so normally I don't have a real preference, but now I'm tilting shortly towards Barcelona. You are obviously a great Madrid fan, so that's a nice juxtaposition, but I think this was a penalty. It was a shirt pull. Like, it's not a blatant foul. It's not a red card, but I think it is a shirt pull. And a foul inside of the penalty area, yeah.
It's a penalty. I mean... Yeah, like, let me put it bluntly. Like, I think we can all agree that a shirt pull is one of those fouls that everyone, like, that you should always call. Like, that's kind of one of the unwritten rules. So, that was a well-given penalty. And yes, it was kind of the turning point of the game, because before then, Barcelona were having the initiative, were racking up momentum. And after that,
Yeah, I think after that, Real Madrid just took over the game, to be honest. I think a couple of reasons were behind that. One, as we have said earlier, Barcelona were doing well defensively in the first half. And I think the biggest problem for Barcelona in the past few seasons, aside from the transition game, has also been to break down a deep defensive block. In that aspect, Koeman made a triple substitution with 10 minutes to go. But before we talk about that, what do you make of Messi's role today? Like, he was playing a bit deeper than normally, like deep, like around the halfway line deep. I don't think that benefited Barcelona that much when they had to score that goal in the last 30 minutes.
That's actually a good point. And it's been the issue with playing Messi that deep, because in the end, like, that has been the fundamental issue of playing Messi deep for the last 3 years or so, which is, sure, if you play Messi deep, he will carry the ball forward. He will do a great job like progressing through midfield. But you cannot have Messi everywhere. You cannot have him moving the ball from deep and also going to score the goals or making the assists. So it just demands too much from Messi. And it's had been clear in previous seasons that, like, he cannot solve everything. At the same time, you also have a trade-off. If you decide to play Messi like more as a striker, he also disconnects too much from the game, which is what I've been seeing from Koeman's Barca in the previous games before this Clásico. So it's kind of a tough position because you don't... Yeah, if you play Messi too deep, it's a problem. If you play Messi as a striker, basically, it's also a problem.
It's a really pessimistic view of looking at having Messi in your team, eh?
That's a fair point. That's actually a fair point. Yeah. Personally, if I had to choose between both extremes, I prefer what I saw today. I prefer Messi playing from deep and getting the Barca offense moving forward. But it is true that it makes it harder for Messi to have an impact in the box in the final third.
So in the last 30 minutes, even though Barcelona were theoretically chasing the equalizer, Madrid have 7 shots and Barcelona have 3. Barcelona cannot get through. We mentioned how Messi played very deep. I thought Fati was out of the game by then. And then Koeman makes no substitutions at all, no subs, until the 80th minute, and then he makes 3 at the same time.
That was kind of weird.
That was weird, right?
It was not game management.
It was not phased. It was not one player goes in. No, he waited, and then he went for the nuclear triple sub.
Yeah, which at that point, honestly, it felt like it was a bit too late. By the way, another point that we should mention, it looks like this Barcelona team attacks better when they sit deep, strike you on the counter, which means that in situations like this one where they have to chase the game, they will struggle more.
Yeah, I think so too. Like, if we zoom in on that subs, what happened afterwards? Busquets went out, and Fati and Pedri went out, and Trincao came in, Dembele and Griezmann. So basically, three full-blown attackers came on, and Coutinho went into the double pivot with Frenkie de Jong. Now, if you see the double pivot Coutinho Frenkie de Jong, you know that was very direct attacking football. Was no controlling anymore, because those are really direct playing guys, and. Like you said, like making the game more direct, I don't think they had any control after that. Like, I can't really remember one big chance they created afterwards. Do you?
Nope. And we have to say that this is not like just something that happened in this game. Like I had been looking and studying like the previous four games from Barcelona. And it is a trend. Like, Koeman keeps doing this with his game management. Instead, like, he never goes for the substitution that gives you like more midfield control. He always goes, either replaces the attackers or goes for even more attackers. So he makes the subs that make you more direct, like in kind of a more desperate attempt to go for the goal. But again, it's just one of those things. I don't know if there was a coach or if Guardiola or someone said something like that, but it's like the fact that you're putting, say, a midfielder in for a forward, it's not necessarily a defensive substitution. Sometimes putting a midfielder in allows you to attack better. And I was kind of surprised. Yes, Busquets was not having a great game, but you could just put another midfielder in there instead of keep putting more forwards in a desperate attempt to get the goal.
Yeah, and let's be honest, Madrid scored their third goal 1 minute before the game was over, like in the 89th minute by Modric. And Barcelona were just so direct and they were crashing on that wall time and time again that the counterattack came their way even more direct because the game was so open at times. So really bad substitution from Koeman. And like I said, it only ended up with Madrid creating the chances. And now you, as a Madrid fan, can tell the listener how Modric killed this game off.
Oh, yes, please. I was kind of giggling like a fangirl when I saw that goal. So I like to see this as Modric finally getting the revenge on Frenkie after that Ajax game in Champions League. Like, remember that one where like Frenkie just cleaned the floor with Vinicius and Modric? Now Modric gets revenge. Like, he receives the ball in front of Modric. He turns. He keeps running forward. Frenkie tries to catch him. Cannot catch him. Passes the ball to Vinicius. Forces Neto to come out of his goal. By the way, in all of this, Frenkie was kind of really, how do I put it, relaxed in his defending. Like, he just kind of let Modric pick up the rebound that came after that. And then you expected that Modric maybe was going to pass it to someone else. No, he just fakes a shot, sits Neto down, and then, like, with the outside of his boot, which is honestly the outside of Modric's boot should go in a museum or, like, in a World Heritage site, and he puts the ball, like, right between Piqué and Longley, who were trying to block the shot from going into the goal. And, yeah, that's it. That's game for Real Madrid. That kills the game.
So Modric an impact sub coming on for Valverde, I think. No.
So there was a substitution of Modric for Valverde, who I think also like Modric, like Valverde got, like, I don't know if it was an injury or a hit, but like he didn't look good when he was being substituted. And then you also saw the substitution of Asensio for Rodrigo. Rodrigo was very active. Like, he didn't play that much, like more than 10, 15 minutes, but he was pretty active there. So it was good. It was nice little subs from Zidane, who also didn't have to do like big changes because, I mean, after he got the goal, there was no need.
No, I'll be honest with you. Like, of course, we have hindsight. But for me, this was so much a win for the team that is so much further in the process with Zidane being there, obviously, with a little break in between. But the key players, they know so well what they have to do in this style and they always adapt in a certain way in these big matches. And if I zoom out for a bit and I look from the helicopter view, it's not that strange that in a tight match like this, in the end, Real Madrid got the win.
No, and I think, like, ultimately what it boils down to, and it's not even like anyone's fault at this point. Yes, we saw today a Real Madrid team that has a better tactical and collective structure than Barcelona. And it's just a matter of at what stage each project is. I mean, Zidane has been here for a while. He won a league title with this team. This team already has some mechanisms that are pretty well developed. Their pressing is not that consistent, but when it's on point, it works. And especially Real Madrid's build-up mechanism, when they have Ramos, Kroos, and Benzema on the pitch, their build-up mechanisms are very mature, very well developed, and they work really well. So at this point, Real Madrid is a more developed team than Barcelona, which is natural because Koeman just got here and he's still trying out a lot of things.
Yeah, and for me, like, the key tactical player is one of your favorites. It was Valverde, actually. And it might be a bit strange because we didn't even mention him that often, even though he did score the opener. But like, the versatility of Fede Valverde made the tactical plan of Real Madrid possible, in my opinion, because he has the defensive awareness to be that right-sided defensive midfielder when Barcelona have the ball. He has the technical quality to participate in the positional play and the build-up phase if it needs to be. And he has the athletic conditions to be the runner behind Benzema if needed. So even though he was not that, he didn't stand out, I think from a technical point, he was one of the most important players on the pitch for Madrid today.
100% agree with that. Like, I cannot add anything else to that. And that's probably the thing that the deficit, or where one would like Fede to do more, like to show up more in the scoreline. He did today. But he's always, from a tactical perspective, very vital player. And the best version of Real Madrid without the ball and defensively requires Fede Valverde.
Yeah. Of course, it's easy to say now about Koeman, the 4-2-4, the 4-2-3-1 formation, it has to go. I'm not that against that. I think against lesser opposition, the 4-2-3-1 has a place, but I'm not sure against top teams. Like, they will play Juventus Tuesday, I think. Tuesday or Wednesday in the Champions League next week. I think maybe he should go a bit more defensive there. But I think it's suited for La Liga, for most La Liga games, but I'm not sure against top opposition.
Yeah, it's not even so much a matter of defense, I think. It's to me, it's a matter of midfield control. Mm-hmm. Like, it's hard for Barcelona to control a game with, like, just the Busquets and Frenkie double pivot. So one thing that I wanted to ask you, like, now that we're doing, like, the takeaways. So part of the reason for this 4-2-3-1 is so that you could have this double pivot and so that Frenkie could have more influence in how Barcelona plays. Do you think it's worth it from what you've seen this season from Barcelona?
Well, like, this game proved not to be, but like I mentioned earlier, I think against most La Liga team, it has a place. Like, it can work. I think it can work. But if you look at the defensive responsibilities for Busquets and you look at how he is doing now physically, then it cannot be played like this against top teams. I don't believe in that.
Yeah, and I felt that before. So a lot of times, like in the previous years, even when Barcelona played like a midfield trio, Busquets was still the most aggressive pressing midfielder. What happened is that the two midfielders kind of stayed back and Busquets went forward. Here, it's actually more complicated for Busquets to go up because he only has one midfielder behind him. So, and to me, that's what leads to those situations where Busquets just stays back and doesn't press, which is very, very not Busquets, let's put it that way. To me, this double pivot kind of makes it more complicated for Busquets to do the things he's really good at.
Yeah, I'm noticing the internet connection is getting worse, isn't it?
It did, yes.
Yeah, but anyway, the first Clásico of the season in the bag. Hopefully many more to come. La Liga, Copa del Rey, hopefully Champions League, who knows. May I thank you, Jose, for being on the pod today, and we'll be back next weekend.
Absolutely. I mean, this was a fun game. Again, we can talk about deficits and things that both teams could do better, but This was interesting to watch. Probably I'm a bit biased because, yes, when your team wins, it's always a bit more fun.
True. Thanks a lot. And we will be back next week. If you would like to leave a rating on iTunes, that would make my day. Please contact us if you'd like. The contact information is in the show notes, which is displayed below in your favorite podcast player. Also, visit betweentheposts.net if you like tactical analysis articles. Thanks so much, Jose, and we will be back next week.
All right. Thanks for having me, Eric. Thanks, everyone, for listening. See you next week.